This third shiur on the halachas of katan, I'd like to focus on some related topics to ketanim when it comes to chesh and mishpat. So the first one is the topic of borrowing money. Imagine you're in a grocery store on Erev Shabbos, and this nice young boy that you know from the neighborhood comes over to you, and he asks you, "Can I borrow $20? I left my wallet at home." So you know from the neighborhood, say, "Sure, no problem." You give him $20, and he goes and makes his purchases. You meet him a while later, and he ignores your gaze. So come over to you, say, "You know, what happened to the $20? And he hems and he haws, and he's just evasive about it. So with no choice, you go approach his father, and you say, "You know, I lent your son $20 in the grocery store, and he is not paying me back." So the father shrugs his shoulders and says, "Well, what do you want from me? Go talk to him. I don't know, why did you give him $20? Why would you trust a child with $20? I didn't tell you to give it to him." So what's the halacha? Can you go to the child's bar mitzvah and sit there, pound on the table, and demand your $20 back? So there are three opinions brought in the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Reish Lamed Hei. The first opinion of the Shulchan Aruch is that a katan shalova is not chayev to pay when he grows up. The other opinion says he is chayev. And then there's a third opinion that differentiates. It says if he borrowed it for his mizaynus, for his necessities, which the Paiskim explained is not just necessities, it's also if he took it for commerce, so then he will be chayev to repay. But if he took it for just other needs, so then he was not chayev to pay when he gets older. Now the Sma, he's bothered by this because we know there's a takana of pu'utas that we discussed in the other segments. Once a child is of a certain age that he gets the basics of commerce, so then he is expected to follow the regular rules of commerce. So why would we be letting him off the hook when it comes to halva? So therefore the Sma says it must be that we're talking about below the age of pu'utas, which is, you know, somewhere between 0 and 6. So up to 10 at most. So he's below the age of pu'utas. So there's where we have three opinions whether or not he is chayev or pater for borrowing money. But when it comes to above pu'utas, there he says for sure you have to pay him back. He would have to pay back the chayev that he borrowed. The shach says that's impossible. If a kid's below pu'utas, there's no shachas to halva when a kid is below pu'utas. And therefore he lets it stand that the machlekes is specifically when we already talk about a child who reached the level of pu'utas. So therefore, in this particular kind of case, it seems the bottom line of the Paiskim is like this third shita, that if he borrowed it for his mizaynus or for business, so then he would have to pay it back. If he borrowed it for other things, then he would not have to. So your child in the grocery store would seem is mechuyev to pay it back if he used it for purchases to buy food, so then he would be chayev to pay it back when he becomes a galal. Now, Rukiger has a long tshuva discussing a person who had a yasim that didn't have anyone taking care of him. This person spent quite a bit of money supporting this yasim. When the yasim got older, so he wanted to withhold some of the yasim's assets that he had, that this person had in his possession, to repay himself for the money that he lent out for him, that he paid out for this guy. And also, he said there were some damages that the child damaged while he was still a katan, and he wanted to be, some recompense for that as well. So Rav Kager has a long tshuva, he brings in this discussion of the Sma and the Shach, and he makes a very important distinction, because or else he says the Sma is not going to work out with the other Rishonim and the Beis Yosef in other places. So he says that this whole discussion of a katan shalava is only if you actually gave him money and he decided what to do with the money. But if you just supported a child, you gave him support, you gave him food, you gave him his necessities, that is not considered katan shalom. That is a different topic. That is a katan shenena, that you were mahana katan, and there is a whole different discussion as to whether or not do we assume that it was given to him as a gift, or can you say that it was that you were intended to get paid back if you didn't specify. So just to make that differentiation clear, that if we were specifically talking about you gave the child money, and he decided, or he could be, he even told you what his plans to do with it, but the point is that you gave him money, and he went and spent that money, not that you spent money on a child, that would not be this topic of a katan shalava. Now, as far as the damages that the person was claiming, so that we'll see later, we'll touch back later, but what's the halacha in a child, the damages, whether or not there's a claim of recompense for that. There was a case that I was witness to of a younger man who was elul time, and he came over to a chesh mishpat expert, and he was reminiscing that in the past, when he was a young boy, a relatively young boy, he was asked by the gabbai of his shul to stand outside the mikveh on Erev Yom Nehron and to oversee the money that as people came. It's a lot of people come that time, and it's usually a higher price than the regular. People need change. So he was in charge of sitting out there and just collecting all the money and giving people change as necessary. So he was not bar mitzvah. He was, you know, probably 10, 11 years old, and it was a long day, and at a certain point he got bored. So he got up and he walked off for a bit. And when he came back, he sensed that there was around $200-$300 missing. And he happened to see around someone, an individual from the neighborhood who was an unsavory individual. And he strongly suspected that this person had just swiped the $200-$300 that were missing. But he didn't know for sure, and he was a kid, there was nothing he could do about it, so he just let the matter slip. And now, it's many years later, he's already married, and he's feeling guilty. He's before Yom Tov. He wants to know if he's mechuyev to go pay back the shul for the money that was taken while he was negligent on his watch. So how do we view this? How do we view a katan who was entrusted to keep an eye on something and he didn't do his job? So the truth is, halacha is that it's very clear a child cannot be a custodian. A child cannot be a shomer. Not only that, it's clear in some reshis adi al pachish mishpah that you're a peshe if you give him something. If someone is entrusted, someone himself is a shomer, and he passes that on, he passes on the item, has a child look after it, even if it's his own child. Normally we say kol mafkid al das ishtei banav mafkid. If you're entrusted with something, you're allowed to give it over to the members of your household to watch it in your stead. But if to anyone under bar bas mitzvah, you're considered pesheya, and you're chayev. You chayev any einus that happens. If that pshia leads to an einus, you're going to be chayev. So it's clear that a katan does not get the halacha of a shomer. It's a pshia because they're not responsible. Now the other way. If the child has an item and he asks an adult to watch it for him, so that is a big machlekes rishonim. Is there a halacha of shmir to a katan? The pasuk seems to says ish, that a person, it says a man who gives something to watch for him. So the idea clearly is that someone who's not an ish or katan would be excluded from that parsha. The question is, how far is he excluded? Shita's Rambam and the Mechaber, they assume he's only excluded from the idea of a shmira, and they say it's referring to a different type of a tainus vaday. But a tainus shemrim, they said he's a regular mafkid, and if he entrusts something to someone, that person is a regular shemer, and he's chayev with all the halachas of a shemer. However, the Ramah says that there is no shvu shemrim to a katan, and the Shach over there brings from the Ran and other rishonim that there is not even a chiyuv, meaning the child cannot make that other person responsible to him as a shomer. Therefore, even if we know that he was peshe, we know that he was negligent, there is not going to be a chiyuv. The Shach himself concludes not like that. The Shach himself concludes that there is a chiyuv shia. If we know he's peshe, if we can prove that he's peshe, or he admits that he was peshe, he'll be chayev. But otherwise, there's no shvua, so you can't prove it. So that is a machlekes rishonim, practically, whether or not this person will be mechuyev to the katan. But the other way, when the katan is being appointed as the shomer, that clearly there is no such halach. So in our case, this younger man is completely potter. The gabbai asked him to watch the money, but he was asking katan to watch the money. A katan is, by definition, someone who is irresponsible. So he did exactly what a katan is supposed to do. He was irresponsible. Now, we could argue that gabbai is chayev to the shul for the money that went lost. He was a pesheh by appointing a child. So that you'd have to know the situation, whether or not that was considered a pshia, or whether that's within his purview, he was allowed to do that. And there's an additional shayla, but he was a shemer of Momen Hektish, so there's a chiyuv of Momen Hektish that got lost, so that would be a different discussion between the gabbai and the shul. But this younger man is clearly off the hook, because he was asked to do a job that a katan should not be asked to do. Agav, the Michas Chinuch discusses whether or not you can be a shayla from a katan. Can you borrow something from a katan? We know the rule is a shil shalemi das is a gazlan. If you borrow something without permission, you have the status of a gazlan. So, essentially, to borrow something from a katan is similar to a shil shalemi das. You're borrowing without someone who gave you the right to use it. He may have told you that you can use it, but he has no das. So he says if we go with the acharet with the rishonim that a katanim are excluded from the parsha of shemrim, then you really are a shel shlemi das, and you'd be chayev even if it's meis machs malacha, even if you're doing what it's supposed to be doing with it, and it just dies, so you said you're still chayev. This is not the parsha of shemrim, you're a shel shlemi das, and you're like a gazlan, and a gazlan is chayev. It says, if you the other rishonim, that they are in the parsha of shemrim, so there he assumes that you'd have the takana pu'utais to give you the allowance to use it, meaning as far as the parsha of shemrim, you have the parsha of shemrim, so you become a shomer, and as far as the allowance to use the item as a shayel, as a borrower, So there, according to the Rishayim, they are in the Parshas, then you, the Pu'utais will give you the status that you're allowed to use it, and therefore he says it makes sense to him that there would be a Ptur Beisim Hafs Malacha if it goes and dies of its own accord, within its regular usage or the regular wear and tear. There he says he would assume you would be Pater. He's unsure himself if it was Baal of Imay. We know that in a regular Dine Shmira, so if the owner of the item was in the employ of the borrower at the time that he borrowed, then the borrower is not liable for anything that happens, even Pshia, if something happens to it while he, for the duration of that of the borrowing. So the Mechzchilik is unsure whether or not there's Alach of She'el B'Bailim when you borrowed from a Katan who has reached level of Pu'utah. So again, obviously, if the Fidu Rishayim that there is no Parsha Rishayim, so clearly there's no Ptur Baal of Imay. But he's saying, even according to Rishayim that there is a Ptur Baal of Imay, that may not give you the status of Baal of Imay if you're reliant upon Pu'utahs. Here you need the fact that the child is able to give you the rights to use it as one of the Pu'utahs, as being part of the Takanas Pu'utahs. And that, he says, is entirely unclear whether Chazal took the extra step and also gave it the status of Baal of Imay if he happened to have been employed by the borrower at the time he took it. So that young man would be Potter. Moving now to the topic of Shluchim. What's the halacha of buying 4 minim from a katan? You go to the Esrik Shuk and you have a bunch of kids selling Aravis, selling Lulavim, selling all sorts of nice things. So we know there's a restriction when it comes to Dalam Yun that has to be Lachem, at least for the first days of Yom Tov, it has to be yours. So if you're going to buy from a katan, then maybe it's not yours. Maybe the Kinyan is not a real Kinyan. So in fact, the Bir Halacha, in Halchas Lulav, he says you shouldn't, you should avoid it. He says if you have a child who's being Seicher and Soregim, you should not buy from him, you should avoid buying from him. Because you don't want to rely, he says, even if you'll have to Takanas Pu'utas, you don't want to rely on that, because maybe it's not a Kinyan Deraisa, maybe it's only Kinyan Derabbanan, maybe that doesn't help for Deraisa, that's a whole big discussion. So therefore, he says it should be avoided. But the more common case is not that the child himself is selling his own stuff. Usually, he's just appointed as an agent to sell on behalf of somebody else. The Asregim or the Lulav and the Aravis belong to somebody else. And he was just asked to sit there by the booth and, man the booth. So what's the status of that? Is that the same as that you have to come out to Takanas Pu'utas? Or is it somehow better or perhaps it's worse? So the truth is that when it comes to real Shluchim, can you appoint a Shliach, a child, to be your Shliach? The answer is unequivocally no. A child cannot be a Shliach. There's no parsha of Shluchim when it comes to children. So they cannot be a Shliach and they cannot appoint a Shliach. So all the halachas of Shluchim completely fall by the wayside. You make a Shliach, you tell a child, go sell my item for me, and he goes and finds a thing and he negotiates a price, and that whole thing is completely invalid. The sale never happened and it could be completely undone. Nothing happened. There is no Takanas Pu'utas for Shluchim. It doesn't exist. There is no halacha of Shluchim when it comes to children. So you cannot be a Shliach and you cannot appoint a Shliach. If Katan tries to hire, he tries to ask somebody to sell something on his behalf, it's also not going to work. There's no din of Shluchim for a Katan. Now, the Nesivus points out, it's a very important Nesivus. This is in Kuf Peches, by the halachas of Shluchim. So it's in Kuf Peches. So the Nesivus there points out that not every person who's working, who's acting on behalf of another, has this halachic status of a shliach. He says sometimes what the shliach is doing is just what he calls a maisa kaif. He's just doing what a monkey could do the same thing. If he's just relaying information, but we don't really need his input, we don't need his das or his kavana or his maisa even in the transaction, he's just relaying information from the buyer to the seller or vice versa, so then he doesn't have to be a shliach. He could just be a sign on the wall. We don't really care. He's just maybe facilitating and doing some of the technicalities, but he's not getting involved into the actual infrastructure of the kinyan, of the transaction. So in that case, he says, a katan could do the job just as well. So he gives two examples. He gives one example of a katan who brings an item from a seller. He brings the item to the buyer, and he informs the buyer, I just came from so-and-so. He wants you to buy this item at this price, and he wants you to go make a kinyan on it. Go ahead and make a kinyan on it. So the buyer, he looks at it, he likes it, he likes the price, and he goes ahead and he makes a kinyan on it. Says the Nesivus, that's a perfect kinyan. So everything is totally fine, because we don't need the seller to speak directly to the buyer. We just need that the seller has to be willing to sell and send a message to the buyer he can go make a kinyan. The buyer has to be aware that the seller wants him to go make the kinyan, and the price has to be set between the two of them. But once all that information is relayed, so there's nothing missing in the kinyan. The fact that Okatan was the one who gave over the message does not take away from the validity of the kinyan. He says the opposite could be true as well. You can have a buyer who gives money to Okatan, says, please deliver this to the seller. And even if he's selling real estate, which you can buy with money, so the kinyan is happening as soon as the seller gets the money. But here again, the kinyan is just the katan. He's just the post office worker. He's just delivering. He's just making a delivery. We don't really need him at all for this transaction. So therefore, again, the Nesiva says that'll be totally fine. So now the Ksei Sechayshin over there takes issue with some of the lamdas. In certain cases, he says that this is more than just relaying information. There, you need the kavana of the person saying go make a kinyan. So he argues on some of the technical lamdas of the Nesivas. But in practice, let's say something like a store, where the merchandise is put out for sale, and the price is clear, so everything is fixed. We know it's for sale, the price is set, all we need is for the lekeach to decide that he wants to buy it, and the minute he makes a kinyan on it, everything is consummated. So in that case, if there happens to be a katan working in the store manning the cash register, he's really doing nothing. Everything, the lekeach could do the same exact thing if there was no one in the store. He could walk into the store and take the item he wants, leave the money on the counter, assuming everything is protected and everything is safe and everything is the way it's supposed to be. So you could do it without anyone there. So the fact that there's a cotton who happens to be standing at the register doesn't take away anything from the effectiveness of the kinyan. So in the classic Esrog Shuk, you have to be careful. Sometimes the ketanim are doing part of the negotiating. The price isn't quite set, and they're given a certain latitude to negotiate the pricing. So there, you do have to be careful. Sometimes they are setting the price, and if they're involved in actually setting a price, then they are trying to be a shliach, but they're not a valid shliach. So the moicher could come along and say, no, he went too far, he shouldn't, I never empowered him to do this. And that just shows, even if that wasn't the case, but it shows that the katan really was involved in the mechir, the price wasn't really set. So then the kinyan is not a real kinyan. And then you back to the biur halacha's problem, that even if the kid reached pu'utas, it could be its only kinyan derabbanan, you don't want to do that. But if it's the type of situation where the prices are set and the katan is just facilitating, is taking the money and handing over the thing, doing the bagging, so that would seem not to be a problem at all. What if a child stole or a child did damage? Is there a chiv for him to pay? Is there a chiv for the parent to pay? It's a very common thing. A guy walks into a grocery store and he has his children with him in the wagon. And he's doing his thing, trying to get things off the shelf. And all of a sudden he looks down and he sees a child is eating something. He's like, where'd that food come from? And then he sees a wrapper sitting on the floor next to him, and there's crumbs all over the place. And all he realizes is his child just took some candy, swiped it off the thing, and he ate it. Now, he sometimes doesn't even know how much was eaten, but even if he does know, he would never intended to buy this child any candy. So is he mechuyev to pay for it? Sometimes he's just doing the same thing, and he hears a crash. He looks down and sees the kid just swiped something off the shelf, and now it broke on the floor. So who has to pay for that damage? So what's the halacha of a katan who stole, or a katan who was mazik? So the Mishnah discusses this concept of a katan shehizik, and it says a very simple statement. It says, "Chayri shayt of a katan pegiyosan raw." It's a very bad idea to meet up with a deaf mute or an insane person or a minor. You don't want to meet up with them. Why? Because they who are mazik other people are potter, and anyone who is mazik them is chayiv. So this is a very bad deal. So you don't want to meet up with them. If they're mazik, they're potter. If you're mazik them, you're chayiv. The Mishnah then continues and says, if this similar concept relates to a slave and a married woman, that they also, if you're mazik them, you're going to be chayiv. If they're mazik you, then you're not going to get paid. But, says the Mishnah, the Eved and the Isha will have to pay if they ever do have money. The only reason they're potter is because they don't typically have money. Eved cannot own anything. Married woman, typically her things are given over to her husband, at least in the interim. He has the rights to them, so she can't take that money away and use it to pay for damages that she caused. So therefore, you don't want to meet up with them either, meaning you don't want to cross them. But the contrast seems quite clear that only they are mechuyev if they later come into money, if she gets divorced, her husband dies, or if the slave gets freed, and then he gets money, so then they'll have to pay it back. Which is, the juxtaposition seems clear, that if it would be a katan in the same case, that he comes into money, he becomes an adult, he would not have to pay later for the damage he did when he was a katan. So that is how the Rambam says it. The Rambam says, if a katan did damage, or a katan stole, he does not have to pay even if it gets older. So there's a clear caveat there. The Rambam says that if the item is still extant, I mean, the katan stole something and he still has it, then he's got to go back. He doesn't get a kinyan on it, so it has to go back. Moreover, even while he's still a katan, Bezdin will step in and take it away from him and give it back. We don't wait till he becomes a gadol. If he took someone else's thing, we just step in and take it away and give it back. But if the thing is lost, the thing is no longer, so then the Rambam says he's pater even when he gets older. He doesn't have to pay. Katan does not have to pay when he gets older. And that is clearly, like we're saying, is mashma like that in the Mishnah. However, there is a Gemara. It's an interesting Gemara. The Gemara is discussing whether or not a garmi, so a direct causative damage, is chayav or pater. And the Gemara is discussing some of the if you destroy someone's loan document, destroy a shtar, that is the classic case of a garmi. And the Gemara is trying to prove that you are chayav. So the Gemara concludes with the story that Raphram, one of the Amiroim, forced Ravashi to pay, and he forced him to pay for such a situation. He made him pay really good money. That's what the Gemara says. So Rashi over there explains that what does it mean he forced Ravashi to pay? So Rashi there says, shockingly, it's actually a steer in Rashi, but over here in Bava Kamma, Rashi says that the case was that Ravashi, when he was young, Bialdusa, he burnt up someone's shtar, he burnt up a loan document, and Raphram forced him to pay for it. So we see that a garmi is chayef. So says the Marach HaZeruah quoted in the Gois HaShri, that you see from there that a katan who does damage, even a garmi, even causative damage, it's not even real damage, he caused damage, as a direct causative damage, then a katan is chayev to pay when he gets older. That's why Raphram was forcing Vashi to pay. So you see that a katan who does damage is obligated to pay when he gets older, clearly not like the Rambam. Shulchan Aruch quotes the Rambam, leaves out this Marach HaZeruah. However, the Pischei Tshuva, he quotes a Shavuos Yaakov. The Shavuos Yaakov, he says, takes issue even with the Rambam. And he says that the way the Rambam says it is that the katan is pater if it was avdu. But if it wasn't avdu, then he's chayev. So he said that avdu doesn't just mean that the thing is no longer extant. He means that the child took the item and then it just got destroyed. But as opposed to if the child actually benefited from it, if he actually ate from it, if he actually used it, so then says the Shavuos Yaakov that he is mechuyev to pay, lekuliyam is going to be mechuyev to pay when he gets older. So he brings chalkim on this thesis of his, but he's very shtark about this, and the Pischei Tshuva quotes it, that avadi is mechuyev, if he was nene from it, he is going to be mechuyev to pay when he gets older. Chassam Sefer is much like this as well. So if the child stole something and used it for himself, so then the Shavuos Yaakov says that it seems to him that he's chayev, and moreover says Shavuos Yaakov that losses de shemayim, he says he always chayev. This whole Torah that a katan is pater when he gets older is only bidei adam, but bidei shemayim, if he wants to losses de shemayim, argues the Shavuos Yaakov that he's going to be chayev to pay for it when he gets older. However, he says losses de shemayim is not going to be a full chayev, since it's just that he has to do tshuva for the averis he did when he was younger. So therefore, he says you don't have to pay the whole thing. You have to pay. You have to settle with the victim to pay something. So the Mishnah Berurah in Aruch Chaim Shemem Gimel, he says that as a rule, if a katan was mazik or katan stole, he's going to be pater meikar adin. But lefnei Mishnah Sadin chayev l'shalom kishagad. Lefnei Mishnah Sadin, he must pay. He doesn't make any caveats. He only has to pay some of it. The Mishnah Berurah says lefnei Mishnah Sadin, he is mechuyev to pay when he gets older. So definitely there is a lefnei mishuras hadin for a child who broke something or ate something to pay for it when he gets older. On the other hand, the Rekvei Eger that we quoted earlier, in that tshuva, that the person wants to take money away from the katan because he did damages when he was a katan, Rekvei Eger just like in one line says, it seems that this Hagoyis HaShri, this Marach HaZeruah, is a das yachid, and that Shalei Kedokhasa, we don't pass like that, so therefore you cannot even withhold money that you have already, can't withhold it from the katan to cover the damages. So it would seem that Me'ikar Din, this katan, is pater. If he stole, if he ate something, Me'ikar Din would seem that he's pater. It's just Chayav L'Sadeh Shemayim to pay for it. A question becomes, can you be Mechayav the parent? Can you be Mechayav a parent for the damage his child has done? So, to make a direct Chayav is very, very difficult. Moshe Sternbach talks about this in Chus and Haggis and Chelek Dalet, Shin Yud Zayin. He talks about this, and he says that it's not mamon hamazik, you don't own your child. So he started this whole series, your child is not yours, you don't own him, he's not your mamon hamazik. It's hard to call him Adam HaMazik also. There's a concept of maimed. If you took an animal and you held him next to something and the animal did damage, so even if it's not your animal, it could be the maimed. It's like, could be, according to some Rishonim, it's like Adam HaMazik. But even that, you'd have to be literally holding the kid right next to the thing in a way that it's very likely he's going to do the damage. It's hard to be mechayev even there. It's arguable that there is a minig to pay. If a child does damage, there is some sort of minig. And it's not a new minig. It goes back, I've heard stories from Europe already, that it was an accepted thing that if a child was a mazik, that the parents would pay for it. I don't know if it really classifies as a bona fide minig. It's hard to imagine a scenario that this guy does damage and someone else pays. It's hard to really fit that to classify as a regular classic minig. But at least for small damages, it does seem to be a pretty standard minig that parents will pay for their children's damage. If it was direct damage, that the parents will pay for it. So if it was only a groma, the Erech Shai actually says, he proves from that sugya of Rafim and Ravashi, the Erech Shai says that if the child only did a groma, then he says that even less day shemayim, there wouldn't be a chiyuv. It would have to be a direct either a mazik or a garmi type of mazik. Then we could say that less day shemayim, the child is chayv to pay when he gets older, and maybe the parents also should be paying, at least, you know, on behalf of the child, maybe they're helping him out. But to go ahead and say that if you did a groma, he's chayv, that he says a child would be potter, even though an adult is chayv less day shemayim, but a child in such a scenario, he says, would be completely potter.